This is the Improved Photography Podcast, episode 110. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, and online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 support. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter offer code IMPROVE at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Improved Photography Podcast. I am Darren Meller, and you are joined today by Susie Simons today from California. She is a very talented photographer shooting everything from landscapes to wildlife to scenes, and she definitely specializes in portrait photography from what I have seen, and I am just so interested in her work. And today she is going to talk to us about 9 tips for a successful portrait session. Welcome to the show, Susie. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, Darren. Thank you so much for having me.
You're so welcome. I was just so enthralled when we saw your email come through, and then you put together this really awesome outline showing us what we're going to talk about today. And the first thing that I think a lot of people don't understand is knowing your camera. So tell me a little bit more about that, Susie.
Well, back in those days in the 80s, I took a camera just like a lot of people take a camera, and it was film back then. It was an old Fujika camera. And I just took that camera and did what I love to do, which was shoot my kids. And you just make photographs, and I did everything on manual. I refused to do anything with the setting. Nothing automatic. Everything from the aperture to shutter speed to, you chose your film. So all manual. And what it did is it forced me to learn and understand that triangle.
Oh, the exposure triangle?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's say I'm a fan of yours and I walk up in, or I actually visit your website, or I walk up to your gallery and see your photos and I say, wow, you take great photos. What would your response to that be? Because some people are real concerned and they have their head just wrapped around gear. And I know you started off with film. So what's your stance on that?
It's not really having the most expensive gear at first. I think if a person focuses on that, they're missing it. I remember having that very inexpensive Fujika camera and then moving to an N65 and then finally moving to a really nice F100 Nikon. But it really wasn't the camera. It's really more of the background, understanding light, understanding composition, understanding that triangle. When you, those relationships begin to come together, that's where the dots are connected and it all makes sense.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. So what got you so interested in light? I mean, light is definitely something that we see and we look as just a nuance of, you know, it's good light, it's cloudy, it's overcast, or it's a sunny day. But what got you fascinated with light?
I believe I still have a love affair with it. When I was very young, my grandfather was a huge fan of National Geographic. And beside his desk, he had stacks of them, also Life magazine. I used to sit there, flip through. I can't say that I was actually reading the magazine, because I really wasn't. I was staring at the pictures. And the photography was absolutely stunning to me. The colors and the contrast and the locations and the emotions, everything that you could see in these pictures. And it was that constant repetition of look. I don't even know back then that I could have said anything to you, what I was even looking at. But it's almost as if I began to saturate my mind with what great art. And when you saturate your mind with great art, it becomes like muscle memory. You don't even think twice about it, understanding where that, the direction where that light is coming from. And that might have been my background, but anybody can truly step in to that spot by picking up those magazines. You doesn't have to be somebody who's 10 or 12. You can pick them up, look at them. Just start enjoying the images and enjoying the light, the shadows, all those things.
Oh yeah, for sure. And those are definitely important things to notice. And I think that you're kind of doing what a lot of people are doing in a more advanced level, and you're thinking like a painter. You're actually seeing a lot of the art that's out there, and you're trying to encapsulate that within your photos. So are there any painters out there that really inspired you while growing up, so that just made you say, hey, I got to make sure to try to replicate that with a camera to the best of my ability?
Again, it's fascinating. I was impressed by many of the artists when I was really young. I used to go to museums all the time. I've been to the Smithsonian, loved art. Rembrandt was one of my favorites, and I don't know that I even could have at that point described to you why, but I think he was real to me. There was a realism about his art, and that is probably why I shoot the way I do today. I love real things. I love real emotion. I love creating it all in camera, not artificially afterwards.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, for the most part, I actually went over to Amsterdam about 2 years ago, and I went back this year in May, or last year in 2014 in May, and I didn't really pick up on the realism of Rembrandt. Some things, and it's really cool, I think, to go to a museum with, you know, someone else, and my dad's a photographer as well. He picked up on the fact there's this huge painting just right in the middle of the Rijk Museum in Amsterdam, where Rembrandt put such details in there to where he had the reflection of the dog that was in front of him on the chest plate of armor. That realism, and then the fact that he thought to use the back of his paintbrush to create highlights in hair. I think that to me has pushed me to be a better image maker myself, because I can work with the natural light that you were talking about that you fell in love with, and then also create something beautiful using post-production. So speaking of post-production, what are your thoughts on that? Do you try to get it right in camera first, or are you someone who's spending a lot of hours in the digital darkroom?
No, I love, there's where the film experience really had its advantage, because if you didn't get it right, it wasn't that you were going to look through the back of your camera through an LCD screen and say, oh, I need to take this over again. You had to get it right. And what that helped me, that was like a step up, that really helped me understand. I mean, I was nervous about moving to digital photography, just a little bit. And the place where it really had its advantage for me at that, when I first started, was in sports photography. That was a real advantage. But the film, I absolutely lost my train of thought for a second.
No, it's perfectly okay. No, with the film and moving on to digital, that had to be kind of just a scary process, because, I mean, there are advantages that digital was offering, but still there's those advantages that film had to offer. So what really had you scared at that point in time?
I think absolutely. At my age, okay, so I was that film era, and now all of a sudden there are these digital cameras. Everybody has one. How do you have to go to a computer now to edit. All your post-production is on a computer. I always spoke of myself, understood that as I'm an immigrant to this technology, and I am no different than the millions of people out there, so many people who are my age in their 40s and 50s, 60s. You're immigrants to this. You weren't born in the era of this magnificent technology, and it's better not to run away from it. I was embarrassed because I thought my mother knew more than I did, and I thought I'd better step up my game. And so really, I was immersed in it. I was forced into it because I switched, but I loved it. And what I did was I ended up in a program at Fresno State, a summer arts program, and that I had to prep for that because I knew that I'd be walking into a class with a lot of very young people who knew they were the natives to this technology. So I was going to be five steps behind, and I was scared to death. But I went to the bookstore and I got a bunch of books on Photoshop because Rob Shepard from PC Photo, he was one of the instructors. And I thought, I got to understand some terminology. And I think the terminology is the hugest barrier when we're making that switch. It's scary because, you know, I talk about it, or you talk about it, or a teacher talks about it, and you're like, I can't even understand the terminology, let alone the concept.
Oh yeah, that would be daunting to me as well. I mean, when I first opened Photoshop and Lightroom, I was scared to death, and I've luckily found a website where I learned a little bit about it, and it helped me out a lot. So did the formal training help out, or because that's something we've talked about in recent episodes. So do you believe that you got what you could out of a formal college training, or do you think that a photographer today should just kind of dive into learning photography a different way? Because in my opinion, I guess the best way to learn is to shoot and then figure it out. But you also learn from cost of exposure with film. So, you know, what's your take on that?
Well, I think both have their advantage. But if you, for example, only have classroom training and no street cred, it won't do you any good. You need the street cred. And what it did for me in the class, I'll never forget, actually, Bob Christ, who was the second instructor for that class, one of the things that he said was, Photoshop is like this, and I think any photographer can take this, because you open Photoshop, for example, or even Lightroom, and you look at everything for the very first time, and you're like, it's overwhelming. It's absolutely overwhelming. You're like, I don't even know where to start. And not because I don't know where to start, I don't want, you're scared to start. He said to me, and to the whole class, it wasn't just to me, he said, one tool at a time, that's all you need. And you add another tool to your tool belt and move forward from there. That took away some of the overwhelmingness of the experience. I will honestly say I learned more things by doing it than in the formal training. But that formal training does have its place, absolutely.
Oh yeah, that seemed to center you and give you some confidence with your work. So one thing that stood out with your work is how you have this confidence with what you're doing, who you're working with, and you build a lot of rapport with your clients. But I mean, how did you build this confidence besides your formal training in the classroom? I mean, using one tool at once, that is a great tip. A lot of people are very daunted when, like you said, when they open Photoshop and Lightroom and look at it and say, what are these sliders? What are these buttons? But literally one tool at a time. If we go back to it, guess what we're using? We're using one tool at a time in the beginning with our camera before we even look at post-production. So back to the main question, what got you this confidence? Because you're a very confident speaker. The images that I see of your clients, they look so comfortable and they don't look like they're faking a pose. So how do you achieve that confidence, and what was the process for that?
Wow. It's I think it's interesting. You know, maybe it was really the sports background that I had, you know, the athletic experience. But the truth is, no matter what we're doing, whether it's writing, reading, making photographs, building a cabinet, for example, it doesn't really matter. You make mistakes, you do it over and over again until you have success. And I think changing the way we think about success and failure builds confidence. Because if we expect someone or we expect ourselves never to make mistakes, we're never going to try anything. I can't do it unless I'm perfect. Well, perfection is wonderful, but practice perfectly. You know, go back in there, do it again, do it again, do it again. And I think being willing to be coachable really helps, helps me. Listening to people, reading, the confidence, I think anybody can build it, but there has to be a core of it. You know, when you first start something, especially when you're a little bit older, or depending on how you look for that feedback, I think feedback is really important, but get it from the right person. When I first started shooting pictures and putting them out there, I'll never forget. There's an image of that gal that I did the first senior portraits for. And I had that N65. The mom and dad asked me to take pictures. I did her senior portraits. And I went to get a business card. I didn't even have a business card. And I took her images and I went into this company, laid these images down, and I said, this is what I'd like to do to create this card. And he said, can you shoot for my catalog? He liked the pictures.
Wow.
Now, to be really honest with you, I looked at him and I underbid myself greatly. But but I knew I could do the job. And I went out there and I grabbed a couple of models. One was the gal that I had just shot, and the other one, it was actually my daughter. And I asked them to do poses for me because it was athletic equipment that they were selling. And I went out there and I shot them. I picked the right light, shot them, presented them, and moved forward. But I think at that moment, Darren, if I had hesitated and doubted myself, it never would have moved forward. You have to get to the spot. Even if you don't know anything, be willing to find out. That's all it is. It's not about knowing everything right at the get-go. It's being willing to find out the answer.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. I mean, when I first started doing photography, and even when I first started the podcast, there were a lot of questions I did not know answers to, but the time and effort that I took to look up those answers also helped me learn as well. So I think when you carry that confidence and you don't have that hesitation, it just makes people that you're photographing probably a little bit more comfortable, because they're thinking, well, I think Susie and Darren know what they're doing in this situation, so I can just sit back and relax. So is there anything else that you do to make your clients comfortable?
Yes, I think it is building a rapport with them, you know, just talking with them. I think it's those pre-conversations before you ever get to the photo shoot. Asking them questions about themselves, you know, finding out who they are. When they feel good with you in conversation, one, they get behind, they're ready for that photo shoot, they have that information, all of a sudden they're like, wow, I do feel good about myself. Find those things that really connect with that particular client. Everybody's different. I had one client who wanted me to photograph her with her new baby, and she had so many apprehensions about physical parts of her that she was nervous. She didn't have that confidence. And I think as a photographer, it's my job to be sensitive to that. Find a way to make that person look good so that they'll look at those pictures and say, wow, I love them.
That is the reaction that you want. And I think that's, you're the ambassador for making sure that those memories are cherished and not looked upon and saying, well, I wish I would have looked better in that shot. I think that that's truly amazing. But before we move on to talk a little bit more about your photography, building rapport with your clients and your lighting techniques, I'd really like to take a moment to thank Squarespace for making this episode of the Improved Photography Podcast possible. Recently, I switched over from a different website hosting, and I am extremely happy with Squarespace. And that's not just because they sell ads here on the Improved Photography Podcast. I was so frustrated traveling the world trying to find a theme where I could upload my images on the go and not be handing my business cards out to clients saying, hey, visit my Facebook page because my webpage is completely out of date. So I stumbled upon Squarespace. It's simple, it's powerful, it's beautiful. They have 24/7 support, and I've never had to use it, and Jim has never had to use it, and that says a lot. We usually are reaching out to tech support all the time, but it's only $8 a month and you get a free domain if you subscribe for Squarespace for a year. So all you need to do is start a free trial with no credit card required to start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, don't forget this like Jim and I did. Make sure to enter offer code IMPROVE at checkout to get 10% off your first purchase and show your support for the Improved Photography Podcast. We want to thank Squarespace for their support of the Improved Photography Podcast. Squarespace, build it beautiful. All right, Susie, well, back to building rapport with clients. Beyond making sure that your clients are looking beautiful and opening up to you and asking them how they're doing, is there any other special techniques and tips that you find that help your clients come back to you over and over again? Because in my experience, anybody can take technically good images, but the real selling point is the experience we deliver to the clients in that interaction. We want them to come back and say, it was so fun to work with Susie. I really think you should go work with her as well, because I'm looking forward to my next photo shoot with her. So how do you capture that mood from your client?
Wow. I think that is uber important, because the truth is there's a lot of people out there who can make beautiful photographs. But you hit it right on the head, because it's really the experience. It's the experience that they remember. I will never forget, I was still shooting film, or maybe I wasn't. Maybe I was already shooting digital. I can't even remember anymore. But I remember this family that I was with finished the photo shoot, And I was just joking with the mom, and I said, or she said to me, what if nothing turned out? And, or maybe it was me that said that. Honestly, goodness, it was a long time ago, hard to recall the conversation. But she said to me, I can remember what she said to me. She goes, it wouldn't matter. I had such a great time today. But yeah, you want the photographs to turn out really well, and you want them to remember it. And she said to me, I have a drawer full of film that I've never processed. And what that said to me was, it really is the experience. There was a gal that I photographed in Arizona, and I really love to do different things. And I finished this shoot with this gal. We had gone to several different locations, and we ended up at this beautiful spot that had this gorgeous giant fountain. And I said, are you up for something fun? And she was fantastic and very willing. And she got in the fountain for some of the photographs. I photographed her behind the water. And then she was a dancer in high school, and that was her love and her passion. So I asked her if she would get on the edge of the fountain and take a leap off of it. And I photographed her leaping off the fountain, and she had such beautiful form. I mean, it was gorgeous, with a beautiful smile on her face. There's no way to just force that to happen. It has to happen naturally. And we finished, and that was one of the images that I took to Fresno State with that portfolio. And Bob Christ from National Geographic said to me, tell me the context of that image. So I shared with him, and he said, that is a photograph that she will always remember because of the experience.
That is memorable. I think that when it comes down to shots like that, you can really even feel that when you see a shot like that. When someone opens up, I have actually a picture of a little boy swinging through a zoo, because the mission that the grandmother put me on was follow my daughter and my grandson around the zoo, but don't let him know you're taking our picture. He knew I was there photographing him, but don't let him know that your picture's being shot, because he always gave this cheesed out smile. And one of the best shots I had was when I was running ahead of him, and then I caught him swinging on the vines at the zoo in our jungle area here in Omaha, and that was that natural reaction. That's exactly what I thought about when you had that shot of someone jumping into a waterfall, because it's all about having fun. And also, another thing that came to mind was, what do you do to ensure that your clients don't have either a CD, a DVD, or just loose prints sitting in a drawer? What do you do as far as printing to make sure that they have a tangible image to appreciate for years to come?
Well, I think one of those things that I've steered away from is to just give a digital image to somebody, because I personally believe that a print is where it's at. I have family photos that actually are 165 years old, and my aunt just sent them to me last Christmas, and I looked at them and I thought about that and thought deeply about it. And we have to move away from just knowing that we have this digital image, it's in a hard drive somewhere. No, make a print. I sell prints. I give prints with my packages. That's part of the entire package. And I think that we need to move away from making it easy on ourselves necessarily. You know, it's like, it takes a little more interaction with somebody, but offer them a package with that photo shoot, so that they have prints.
Yeah, having something tangible is completely necessary. Like every one of my shoots, I do the same thing. I offer X amount of prints based on their package price, and I also like to make sure that they know what they're getting. And then if they do want the DVD, this is what I do. I'm not sure if you have a different approach, and if you do, I'd love to hear it. For instance, on some of my prints or sessions, I'll say, okay, if you want the DVD with a print release, it's going to be $50 a print or more ordered, and then you get the DVD free. Otherwise, it's a $50 DVD. And then for weddings, it's usually $100 just at this point in time until my price points change. But that's just, and when I explain it to my customers, I say, okay, the reason I'm doing this isn't because I don't want to give you this DVD. It's because I want to show you what a true quality print that is guaranteed to have archival ink and last for hundreds of years, like you're saying, to be cherished down the road. And I think that that's very, very important and often overlooked. There's so many shoot and burn photographers out there. I'm not going to talk bad about them, but for the most part, a lot of those DVDs just get thrown into a junk drawer.
Yes, just like the film did, and they were never looked at ever again. But when you go back that and you think about what that gal said to me, again, what she was saying is it was the experience. So if you can bridge that for the customer, you don't have to throw it away. This is why I offer prints. This is why this is more important. And I think if more photographers move with that flow, for example, we can change. The pros can really change that for the customers and change their thinking. When it comes to the expectation of prints and a digital file, I never gave a digital file, and I fought it tooth and nail, actually. It was incredible. I didn't want to do it. And I knew I had to offer something, but I wasn't doing it. The only people I ever gave a digital file to were people that hired me for headshots, theatrical headshots, mm-hmm. commercial headshots. Those people got a, and now I just Dropbox it to them. They have full res files, but that's that package.
Okay. So depending on the package and the context, that's really what decides whether or not you're going to give that up. Because for the most part, we don't want to give that out there. One of the guys who works at a camera store here in Omaha, he has a bunch of accreditation. He has National Photographers of America, and he's also part of the Nebraska Photographers Association for Professional Photographers. And the funny thing was, and it makes me think of that with this conversation, is he had a grandmother come up to him and ask him, and he told all of his accolades and awards that he've had and showed his portfolio. And she said, okay, are you the cheapest? And that's really what's shifting in the market. You know, I think that that's so tough, is that people, they want this value from these shoot and burn photographers, but they're not realizing the actual value that they're getting down the road. Maybe at the point of sale, they're getting a good value, but down the road, if they're not having any forward thinking, they're not really getting that much value. They're getting a disc and some shots that maybe or may not have been edited correctly as well too, because if I'm not taking the time to learn the mastery of printing, in my opinion, I don't really think that I'm taking the time to really deliver a product to my client that I could stand behind and be proud of.
Absolutely. There's nothing that makes me smile more than seeing a printed image, a beautiful metal print or a canvas print. It doesn't really matter. It is tangible. When I go back and I dig those pictures out that are 165 years old, I would love to see images last that long today.
Oh yeah. Definitely. And back on a different topic, when looking back to your understanding of light, I'm looking at this photo here, and it's a picture of a maternity shot of a young gal leaning against a wall here. And just the way that you captured light, do your clients ever pick up on the fact that you're capturing this beautiful photo? Do you ever show them the back of your camera just to make them feel comfortable? What's your process to help them kind of understand that you're capturing this quality of light and also exuding that confidence?
Absolutely. There are times where I will do that. But I have learned you can't count. Like, that particular photograph was amazing, beautiful, beautiful window light. And there's nothing that is, it envelops your client. It wraps around them. That photograph, just, I love that picture. And I showed that one at Fresno State when we, at the end of that art program, we had a huge art show, and that was a standout by a very famous photographer, which I cannot even recall his name, which again made me really happy. I was thinking, wow, it got noticed, which there's nothing wrong with that. It's not like I seek that, but it felt really good to get it. But yeah, I do show the client the back of the camera occasionally. It is not always. And the reason I say it's not always, because what if you are so confident that is the perfect photograph right there. Mm-hmm. And you set that expectation up for them. And guess what? What if you missed it? What if you missed the focus the way you really wanted it? So you got to be careful.
Yeah, I actually haven't thought of it that way. That's a very good tip, because even if on the LCD screen, we've always said this with landscape shots and different shots, we can't tell until we get it on a big display whether the shot was really great or whether it was just okay. And yes, why would we want to get their hopes up that we had this beautiful shot there, and then we get home and we say, oh shoot, we focused on their nose and not their eyes.
Yes.
That makes a lot of sense. So with this shot, this one was done with natural lighting. Before I read and we talked to prior to recording, I thought this was done with almost like an Einstein, just the way that the light wraps around with a really large light diffuser. But it looks like you use a lot of natural lighting to a really great ability. I see a photo here that you sent through of an older couple on some four-wheelers, a beautiful little girl hugging her teddy bear being splashed with nice warm sunset lights. So I mean, you understand light to the greatest ability. So how do you educate your clients that, hey, we need to get out here at this time of the day or this time of the day to get you the photo that we need? Is it just part of your building rapport process, or how does that figured in, just to make sure your client understands what your direction is for the best of you know, their best interests?
Absolutely. When a client is talking, they're sharing and they're telling you the things that they like or what have you, they have memories in their own mind flipping through magazines. They have memories of things that they saw that they love, that are attracted to. I do that exactly how you said it. It's an education process. Those two images that you were referring to, the couple that is on the four-wheelers and the little gal on the right-hand side, the gal on the right-hand side with the teddy bear, that I used a reflector. Mm-hmm. The one on the left with the couple on the four-wheelers was no reflector at all. And the reason I highlighted those for you, and I would share with a customer, that golden light on the couple can be achieved. It's exactly the same light, but one was a reflector and okay, bounced it. And I think if it's done right, you don't necessarily need it. It's a tool to use. Mm-hmm. You don't have to use it, but it's a nice tool. I needed it with a little gal, but the other one, it was just working.
Oh yeah. So to come full circle, it's almost like what your professor is saying: when you were daunted by Lightroom and Photoshop, use one tool at a time. If you can get away with just using natural light, or if you need to add another tool like a reflector, use the reflector if the first tool doesn't do it for you. So that's a great tip.
Absolutely. We had a local shop that I used to go to when I first started shooting digital, and I would always dragged my physical portfolio everywhere I went, because you never know who you're going to meet, right? And so I always dragged that physical portfolio with me. And I remember there was a couple students from Fresno State in the store, and he would ask me on several occasions, "Oh my gosh, I love the light you're using. Were you using ABCD, reflectors, softbox, whatever?" He thought everything was set up. And I said, "No, I said, that's just natural." And I think it's practiced. It's not going to happen automatically. You got to practice and you got to understand it and understand that triangle and how that will affect your exposure.
Yes, and one thing that's shining through in this interview here is knowing things from the camera to the lighting, and then also I'd like to touch upon location, because this is something that really stood out to me, was when you talked about taking pictures of locations without someone standing in it, or even a picture of a location with someone standing in it, to give your clients a selection of what they have to offer versus just trying to guess, okay, let's meet in this old district of town and hope for the best shoot. Giving them that selection, does that really add a lot of value to your customers, or are they really receptive to that, or how does that go over?
You don't have to do it with everybody, but it can work. And it not only works for the client, but it can work for you. Why? Because if you're shooting in multiple locations and you have kind of an index, if you, for example, you know Sally over here, you've already talked with her, and she likes kind of an urban look versus a, you know, I don't like going to parks because I usually go where everybody doesn't go. I don't like cookie cutter. I dislike it, actually. So I like to do different things. But if you can tell that that's what they need, then offer it. But it also has a second purpose. And the second purpose is really an index for the photographer, because I don't have to rack my brain for the list of locations that I love. I can have a thumbnail picture with a name and location. And as I'm talking to that person, I can say, "Oh, this might work." And you know what's kind of going on at this particular time of the year. That's why your own city and town that you work in, you're an expert in that. because you know what's going on. And so, yeah, that index for yourself is a huge resource.
Oh, it should be. I mean, our own backyard should be the yard that we know the best. Something that I've noticed with a lot of photographers and talking to people who have had their pictures taken or images created by local photographers in my area say, oh, we are wandering around forever thinking of where to take a shot. And I think that that's a big mistake a lot of photographers take, because then you lose that confidence. And then probably what's going through the client's mind is, okay, does this person know what they're doing if they don't even know where to photograph me?
That's exactly. That's why you have to have it, for the most part, set in stone. Yes, we're going to shoot here. But if you know that spot, you know the nuances of little around the corner spots.
Oh yeah, for sure. And one thing I was going to say too, just building upon that, is understanding, you know, composition basics and working with those locations. So what are your thoughts on composition? How do you achieve it? Because there's so many interesting shots here, like ones that I would think of having someone sit on the stairs, but also having this angle here to kind of accentuate the leading lines of the stairs and everything, with one of these models here towards the end of the PDF here. I'm just trying to figure out what do you do for composition? Do you go to the location a day before the shoot, figure out how you're going to set it up, or do you do some test shots to help the model or the subject unwind and then figure out the composition, or what's your process?
Well, in the very beginning, I used to, because you know, it's always a process, Darren. It's mm-hmm. always a process, and it you is. Learn what works and you learn what doesn't work. I used to, you go in and take a peek at it. You know what it is. That shoot was in Arizona. It's a fantastic arts museum, which has a lot of really great lines, lots of great lines in there. Not just the staircase, but there's a lot of industrial looking pipes and so on and so forth. And if this particular gal was coming to Los Angeles to do some modeling, and I took her there because I like the lines. She was tall and lean. And again, it's really about that person that you're shooting. What, you gotta know what they're looking for, and feel good about that. What they're looking for. It's in it, and it always has to do with that composition. You can't shoot everybody the same. There are people who you can shoot. For example, she is super lean and you could really shoot her from almost any angle and still would look good. But you can't do that with everybody. So for this particular gal, I would look at her and I see, now my eye catches it right away, Darren. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the experience. When I shot film, I camera cropped everything, and it came very automatic for me. When I started shooting digital, I had to take a step back. I had to take a step back and see the image differently, move to different angles. You know, I think what helps people not only is doing it, but watching people. Go along with a photographer that's local with you. Go along with somebody and offer to shoot. Even if there's nothing more than you're shooting as a second shooter, go and watch and learn. Learn what they do to get that shot.
Yeah, that's actually one thing I did not too long ago. I sat there and I did it for free. They offered to pay me some money, but I just said it was worth my time to learn a little bit more about speed lights. And I sat there and held speed lights for a photographer and held reflectors and learned a little bit about their posing, their composition, and their techniques. So I think that pairing up with another photographer and having that willingness to learn and accept change is definitely going to pave your way to continuing to improve your photography skills. So one thing I read in here also that just really stands out to me is how, before getting on that discussion that we usually go over when photographing seniors or younger people or even family photos, two questions come to me from the clients. A, what do I wear? And then B, the question comes from me, okay, what are they wearing and how do I photograph it? What do you do to kind of bridge that gap of knowledge?
Okay. Well, one of the things that I do, like for senior portraits, I give them the option, and not everybody takes it, but they have the option of bringing several clothing changes. And what I suggest in the conversation is, prior to the shoot, is lay your clothes out. You know, preparation is the key for everything. So if the client has laid their clothes out. They see their top, their pants. If it's a gal, they necklaces, jewelry. They have a visualization of what they're going to look at. And then I tell them, hey, bring something extra, because you never know. Because there are moments, especially with gals, they're like, oh, I'm not feeling it today. And so they want to put something different on. Go for it. I would, with the gals, they don't always have nice jewelry, for example. So I would bring some things along. Say, hey, if you don't have something, you want to use something that I have, go for it. There was a young gal who came to do senior portraits, and I was chomping at the bit to do her senior pictures, because when I met her, she was a sophomore. And when she showed up for her senior pictures, she had completely chopped her hair off. It was punk. She had the most beautiful face. And I thought, oh, her hair in this point, and she also bleached it, was going to take away from that gorgeous face that she had. So, and she showed up in, and she, her mother, she's very artistic, but she showed up in the clothing that she, now I knew her really well, so it was different. I wouldn't do this to somebody I didn't know. But I knew her well enough to say, can we change things up a little bit? I actually offered her a plain black button-down shirt. And I put this, she had beautiful dark skin. I put this beautiful turquoise necklace on her, and I shot her in front of some window light. And it was to die for, because she, and I'm going to, I don't know if you have those pictures yet, but I think I Dropboxed them to you. They're just gorgeous.
Oh yeah.
For guys, the young men that I shoot, I would say to them, hey, go pick up a GQ. Well, I don't know today. They're a little bit risque, but go pick up a, I used to do this. I really haven't offered that very much anymore, because I'm a little nervous about what's inside the magazine now. But I would say, hey, go check them out and pose yourself. Because the thing that people really don't like is I remember not liking it when somebody grabs your chin, tilts your head, yada, 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 and you feel so contorted and it doesn't look right.
No.
It doesn't even feel right.
It doesn't. It feels like I'm going to a chiropractor instead of going to a photographer.
Yes. Exactly. So I think what happens is if you get someone, you find a way that they can experience those things prior to the shoot. It's just rehearsing for a play in many ways. You know, I'm going through this in my head. By the time I show up, I understand something. It's not a blind date.
Very true. And also, that sounds like a perfect example of how you're adaptable and spontaneous, which we touched upon with the girl jumping into the fountain. And that's just such an awesome shot, or her boyfriend playing the didgeridoo. But one thing I want to talk about before we end this recording is to talk about your unguarded moments. I mean, the soul of a great portrait really tells a story. And I'm looking at your unguarded portraits where we just have those natural looks of a mom sitting in between her two boys, looking in different directions. We have this kind of disgusted look on an older woman's face of her husband holding a pitchfork. I just thought that was kind of funny. I'm not sure if it's a disgusted look or just that usual wife look that we usually see that my mother gives to my dad quite often. But still, how do you capture those moments? Are you doing street photography style work, or what's your technique for that?
I think the genesis of that ability to see those moments and make it happen is, yes, you know, growing up on chewing on Life magazine and other journalistic magazines and periodicals. You know, you see things that are not posed. You like that street photography capture. And the family on the left-hand side of that particular image, you know what it's like shooting little kids. You know, they want to give you that cheesy look. You don't want that cheesy look. You have to be willing to take the time, but not too much time. And those are balancing acts, because, you know, the bigger the group, the less time they want to take with you, because, you know, it's just, it drives people nuts. So you don't want to, you got to be ready. And that particular family, I had the tripod set up, and a lot of times and I don't remember for sure if that was a tripod shot, but I think it was. I had the tripod set up, which I don't normally use for family portraits because I like to move. Mm-hmm. But I remember having it set aback from the rock, watching the boys. I'm having a conversation, and they looked off. One looked down, one looked off. Mom's looking at me. I'm like, that's it. And, you know, it's like those moments. That's one of my favorite shots. I had somebody ask me, like, how did you get that to happen? Well, people do what people do. I have to be ready.
Oh, yes.
I'm the one that has to be ready. That really beautiful shot that you're talking about on the right-hand side, actually, that is a hilarious story. That couple celebrated their 75th wedding anniversary.
Okay.
And this was my brother's in-law's grandparents. Figure that one out.
Okay.
And I was in Tucson. They were celebrating their 75th, and we did this huge photo shoot. And it was really my brother's idea. He said, oh, wouldn't that be hilarious if you shot him like American Gothic? Well, the partner to that picture, she's got a cute smile on her face. And this was the second shot where she gave him the screw eye, you know?
Yeah.
and he was so charming. It was beautiful. It was a beautiful, beautiful moment. And they were married 75 years. He passed away when he was, I think it was 2 years ago, just about a week shy of 100.
Oh, wow.
But a great moment.
Oh, yes. Especially one that the family can cherish for years. I mean, just the look on her face and just the pride and just that beautiful face. He just looks like a very humble person. And that's what's really being conveyed through the story. And then we're showing her side. And it's just so unguarded. I love that. And then the last shot I'm looking at is of the little girl jumping out of the pool. Is that just based on your coaching experience and trying to get those unguarded moments?
It has such a great story about it. You know what that's like, Darren. Every photograph has a backstory.
True.
We had, when I shot that was actually film. And we were, one of our water polo players had passed away in a car accident.
Oh,
and
wow.
So it was a very difficult time. And I coached this was at a real small school. And this was actually our very first game that we kind of got back together again, and we were at a school in Fresno, and the school had some very cool fountains and stuff set up, almost a play area that they use in the summertime for the community. And the kids, this little gal is 12 years old, 11. She was not even 12, I don't think, at the time. And they were absolutely just having a great time. They saw me. Now, this is a relationship that has been already established because I was their coach. I pulled my camera out at the very end, and I was photographing these kids just having fun. And it was beautiful.
It's
always been one of my most favorite photographs. They're like, oh, how did you get that water just to be so perfect?
It's perfect. I mean, literally, it splits in between the bridge of her nose, which isn't where the story is, and then we can see both eyes perfectly sharp, and they're just really green, and they show through, and they contrast so much against that blue water, and then the white part of the background with her red suit and everything. It's just a wonderful photo, and I would have never guessed that was shot on film. So I'll definitely have to link some people over to your website, your Instagram, and all the other outlets to find you. But it's just been a sincere pleasure sitting down with you today and talking to you on the podcast today, Susie. I think that this information is going to help a lot of people in our audience on improving their portrait photography skills. And I just sincerely think that what it comes down to is building that relationship with your customers, your clients, and everyone else that you interact with. Your positive spirit definitely has been conveyed in this recording. And I think that that's really what we need to do, is keep chugging along, keep learning, and never shut off our brain to wanting to learn new things.
Absolutely. I'm still smiling right now. You can't see me, but I'm actually smiling. So I'm with you on that. It's about having fun and doing it.
Exactly. Well, I really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule with us today, Susie, and we will talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Darren.
Thanks. Bye-bye.